Well, hello, fellow fancy baseball nuts, and what an absolute pleasure it is to have your company again on the Fancy Extra of the Johnny and Josh Show. This, of course, the home of fancy baseball discussion, and we're looking to review the season, now that we're into the postseason, review some of the fancy heroes and fantasy zeros. Now, talking of heroes and zeros, this is, of course, a chance for me to join my own personal fancy hero, the legend that is Mr. James Holden. Jimbo, welcome.
Dorothan, hello. Yes, it's the dust is slowly settling in on the Braves' fantastic season. It's obviously very sad for us not to make the World Series, but it's been good to get some sleep this week.
In a funny sort of way, Jimbo, that's part of the reason why I'm quite glad we've taken a breather before doing the sort of season roundup, because I got completely engrossed into the postseason with the Braves' journey. And when we took a 2-0 lead against the Dodgers in the NLCS and then a 3-1, I genuinely started to dream and believe that maybe this was the year. And when you consider the drought that has been postseason baseball for the Atlanta Braves, for us Braves fans, that was an exciting prospect. And it's taken a week to recover from the disappointment.
Absolutely. I mean, it's about channeling it, isn't it? A positive thinking. Hopefully this is the beginning of a new era rather than a one-off. So, yeah,
we'd be excited. I mean, no doubt about that, mate, because you must surely, as a fellow Braves fan, you must have thought when we started suffering the injuries in the pitching rotation, non-attendance of Hernandez, Cole Hamels, etc., you must have thinking the worst of, well, what can we hope from this season? If we make the postseason, that's a bonus. But then to make the postseason and win the pennant and then sweep the wild card series, sweep the divisional series, even though you're up against the odds-on bookies favourite that is the Dodgers, you must have been a believer, surely, just like me.
You know me, I look at the facts. I think the Dodgers are a very, very strong team. But 2-0 up is, disappointing not to have made the World Series from that kind of position, as you say. 2-0, 3-1 up, you would hope we would make it. I'm trying to focus on the positive. This is the start of something, and next year we'll come back stronger, even better pitching. A lot of the younger players will be 1 year older. Yeah, so let's hope for big things next year.
Well, obviously, your approach is rubbing off on me, Jimbo, because I'm focusing on the positives. I had an option when I introduced you, because I'd already referenced Fantasy Hero, Fantasy Zero. I had a 50-50 call on that one, and I went with the hero. I went with the hero because you're my mate, and you've been giving up your time on this podcast. You've been waxing lyrical on a major basis. And more importantly, and this is something now I can reveal to the world.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm not going to go down the route you think I am. You were kind enough to offer your expertise to me a long time ago. We're talking 9+ months ago. We started chatting just on a personal level as you started to instill your fantasy baseball wisdom. And I've always said that if you could turn me into a fantasy baseball winner, that would be your greatest hour. Not this podcast, not all the titles you've won as an individual. Turning me, Mr. Fantasy Baseball Uselessness, into a winner would be your greatest hour. And you didn't tell me.
So, if you are a listener to this, if you've been listening throughout the season, or even if you've only been listening to this show for a few weeks, you will know that Johnny's team has been navigating uncharted territory with regard to how his fantasy teams are doing. And maybe now is the moment, JG, to put everyone out of their misery. So tell us, how did you and your teams get on in the fantasy season this year?
Jimbo, I want to take this moment to thank my mother, thank my father, thank my family, thank my friends. This is obviously an Oscar speech. You can only make an Oscar speech if you are a winner. I've spent my whole life not even being nominated. I'll be lucky if I'm serving the drinks at the Oscar ceremony. I'm not sitting there looking disappointed because I was nominated but didn't win. That's how useless I've been. But this year, not only was I nominated, but I'm very happy to report that, yes, after I think it's 15, 18 years of trying in my main auction league, I have finally achieved a title. I'm being told by everyone involved it's meaningless. They're putting an asterisk instead of my name on the trophy. They're already trying to put me down and say it's a worthless piece of silverware. There's nothing to be proud of. I don't care. Not only did I acquire my first ever title in that major league, but in your very own head-to-head league, which I've only been a member of twice last season, you'll be the first to tell everyone I came last. And this season, I went to victory. The only man to beat the team that was in the final with me. That was an unbeaten team. They'd won every single week. I took them down in the final and decisive game. So not only am I a title winner, for the virtually the first time in my life. I have actually won a title before, but like one that's like really difficult to get. I am a double title winner. I'm joining the 61 Spurs. I'm joining the 1999 Chelsea team as a double winner. And no one, Jimbo, can ever take that away from me. No matter how many asterisks they put beside my name. Now, no matter how often they dispute or they argue or they belittle. My name is Johnny Gould, and I am a fantasy baseball double title winner.
Gordon, but if you're a new listener to the show, I'm really sorry we had to put you through that. I really am.
Can I point out the obvious? If I was useless after all the effort you've made and after all the tips you've given on this show, then who the hell would ever bother to listen if it actually didn't work? And I am living proof you work, mate.
Anyone can be a winner. No, seriously, many congrats, Johnny. I'm really pleased for you because I think as people are well aware, it's meant a lot to you. And this particular league, as you say, for nearly 20 years of striving hard, I'm really pleased. And I think, your other half will be delighted to see all these, large trophies heading down the M4 to the West Country and weighing down your mantelpiece for the foreseeable future.
Well, Jimbo, take it as read that I will be putting out on social media a photograph of the trophies as they sit in pride, amongst the many other trophies I've got. The Father's Race at Haywood Prep School. I've still got that trophy. I won it 3 times. I never gave it back. I took the approach of the Jules Rimet. They asked me for 2 years, have you still got the trophy? And I said, no, I'm not sure I have, actually. And there it sits on my mantle, proud of place. Not that I'm a pathetic individual, but we both know I am.
I'm glad we've got some proper silverware now.
Absolutely.
Right. Are we allowed to move on now?
Yes, of course we can. Yes, I've had my moment. Let's move on. I apologise to everybody getting a little carried away. But when you spend as long as I have being useless to have that one rare moment of glory. Anyway, enough. Right, let's do our own fantasy awards. We've had this discussion. I think it's a great idea. Like an awards ceremony. Let's talk, Jimbo, about, first of all, from players that you drafted, who your heroes are. And then maybe some more generic names that perhaps you didn't have and you wished you had. And I'll do the same. We'll keep it brief. But then also let's look at the fantasy losers. Who's are the ones that cost you a title or caused you much angst and pain? And then maybe also a little discussion on those that were awful elsewhere and you're thinking, thank God I didn't draft them. Yeah. You're happy to do that? You're happy for that? We don't need any speeches, by the way. We just want you to get up there.
You don't get any speeches from me, but no, this is all about you, Johnny. Nobody's even asked about my teams, but
of course you're right. Well, I didn't want to rub it in because obviously
there are other leagues. Anyway, that's not what we're talking. Yes, a great
Nobody
idea.
Nobody cares, Jimbo. Nobody cares. No, all they care about was you were in both the leagues I was in, which I won, which means by definition I beat you in both. That's all anybody cares about. Right, fancy heroes, Jimbo. Tell me a couple of the ones you selected, you drafted, and you loved.
Well, we talk a lot, don't we? In terms of how to win a fantasy league, and I still think we need to do a specific podcast just on that. But we've talked a lot about value and about you need to deliver more value than where you acquired those players. So, but part of that, you need some good players who stay healthy and are brilliant. So in leagues I had Mookie Betts, absolutely delivered. I had Liam Hendricks, two or three places as a closer. He absolutely delivered for the price I'd pay for him. And pitcher, I had Yu Darvish as my main ace in three or four leagues, who delivered significant value for particularly where he was drafted. So you need some of that. Then in terms of unexpected value, I mean, it was players for me, Jose Abreu, probably Will Myers was probably my biggest, but bought him very, very cheap in a couple of leagues and had a fantastic season. I'm sure we'll talk about Teoscar Hernandez throughout this year. Players like that. And Denelson Lamet, I have to say, a particular shout out to him. He was very cheap in two leagues and absolutely, turned into an ace or a number two. So really, really impressed with them on my own teams. You can do a couple of yours, or do you want me to do some more broader people I like?
Yeah, no, we'll talk about my team. I'll give you... Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there is that massive difference between a player that you pay big money for, which you're not going to get vast additional value if you've taken. But you've always told me you've got to go for those sort of guaranteed $40 players that do produce. And luckily for me, the ones I focused on, Trey Turner, Jose Ramirez, both of them, very similar stats. Turner was, what, 46 runs, 12 homers, 41 RBIs, 12 stolen bases, 394 on base percentage. You can't ask for any more than that. And actually, this is significant. When you consider the money I spent on both Turner and Ramirez, we're talking big money. Ramirez, I spent $38 on. And actually, what I love is that one of them, Turner played 59 games, Ramirez played 58 in a 60-game season. And you've said it to me so many times, you've got to get players, they get loads of at-bats, and that means loads of game time. And between the two of them, they only missed three games out of 120. That alone justifies the money you've spent.
Good. Good. Yeah, no, absolutely. Don't agree. I mean, a couple of, I would call out, there's a brilliant website called Razzball.com. They have a sort of an awards thing called the Razzballies, which is an absolutely hilarious read. If you ever get the time to go there, definitely worth checking out. If you are a listener to the show who's keen to do that. And they picked out a couple of other sort of heroes and zeros. And the heroes they've got, Luke Voit, who I did draft in one league, but dropped before the season started. That was a bit of an error. I think, you know, Luke Voit had a sensational season for the Yankees, an awful lot of home runs, really brought a lot of people a lot of joy. And pitching-wise, Shane Bieber. I mean, Bieber was a great pitcher last year, but he turned himself into a top five pick this year, and there's no way that people will be going outside of the first round in drafts next summer. So those two heroes I had on absolutely zero teams, but I think really would have helped a lot of teams do brilliantly.
Yeah, I actually, interestingly, I didn't mention the pitching that I picked up that I paid for in draft, and certainly the two best ones that I focused on was Trevor Bauer. I think I only paid like $9 for him. What a return I got on that money. And Liam Hendricks was my target, which I know was a discussion we'd had, a player that you focused on, but I got him in the auction league that we did, and again, didn't cost me big money, single figure money, and absolutely delivered probably the best closer in the season. So those two names really provided me with the sort of, you know, the solidity, the base, the foundation. But looking elsewhere, never ceases to amaze me how consistent Freddie Freeman is, and why I don't year on year just say, hey, bite the bullet. Yeah, he's going to cost you money because that man is so consistent. But Fernando Tatis, I mean, there's
two Braves fans doing a podcast, and neither of us are there. I mean, I've got five,
it's a disgrace, isn't it?
Yeah. And I have Freeman in zero leagues. He's amazing. I have had him in the past, but he is expensive. But that kind of metronomic production, I think it was the he had COVID, you remember, at the beginning of the season.
Right.
And you know, we'll talk about how that's affected different sorts of players. And you've got a couple of players who I think were affected by it negatively, and we'll talk about somebody else later. But he seemed to have it very severely. And that put, I think, you know, certainly Felix Hernandez almost decided to opt out of the season because he saw how badly Freddie had COVID. But came back to, I really hope he wins the MVP. I mean, superb season.
But when you focus on players that do cost, and obviously therefore the value they produce, it may be a little bit more than you pay, but it's never going to be monster more. But when those players that I so wish I had focused on, the likes of Fernando Tatis in our auction league, was picked up for, what was it, $70, yeah, and produces a $40, $50 season. I mean, that's where you win a league. That is the difference maker. And not surprisingly, the owner of Tatis in our league was very, very competitive and led the league for much of it. Pitching wise, I mean, Shane Bieber, Brad Hand, if you're a Cleveland fan and you focus on picking up your own team, you'd have done fantastic the way Brad Hand, how good was he? Yet again, consistent. Shane Bieber, I mean, just lights out. Cy Young, 122 Ks in 77.1 innings pitched with a 1.63 ERA, 0.866 whip, 8 wins. He's produced, he is your ultimate, you know, in pitching terms, your ultimate Mike Trout. He's a five-tool player. The only thing you haven't got is a save and a hold.
He is. It's very interesting. I mean, I like Shane Bieber a lot. I think it's very interesting. He had an awful lot of his games were against a fairly weak central teams. So he will not be on any of my teams next year. He will go in the first round, and I won't be paying that for him. Not to say it's not worth it. I just don't see there's no value to be had. He can't deliver more than he's done this season, and I can't see him replicating. He'll be brilliant, but I can't see him replicating those stats again.
Jim, that's a really interesting point you're making, is, you know, we're giving out awards for great achievement, but what's then the impact on them next season, and will there be value to be had? There's no way, for instance, Tatis is going for the sort of money. He's proven it now, back-to-back seasons. He's going to be, is he? He's got to be a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think it'll be a top-five pick.
And I just can't see you getting much value out of that.
We've talked about this, and as I say, pre-season, we'll talk about this for people next year. But it's for example, I have Mookie Betts in a keeper league. I will be keeping him, even though he costs, you know, a vast fortune, because I think he'll deliver another top five season. That's a 10-teamer. You need an awful lot of stars in your team, and he's very well guaranteed. So that I will keep him even at that price. In other leagues, I wouldn't necessarily do that, and you'd be looking to acquire value. So something like Yu Darvish, this was the year to have him. You had Lucas Giolito, you had Trevor Bauer. Next year, all of those players, rather than being fifth or sixth round players, will be second or third round players, and there won't be that opportunity to derive value. And the key is to find next year's Yu Darvish, or indeed to find, you know, next year's Shane Bieber. And I think, to be honest, we will talk about next year's Shane Bieber later in this podcast.
Okay. Well, let's focus, first of all, since we're still in the awards six-year scenario, on the zeros. And I have to say, one that really springs to mind as a man who's doing it all in the postseason, which actually possibly is all that matters for his LA Dodgers, and that's Mr. Cody Bellinger. I mean, how big a disappointment was he for a first-round pick in the regular season?
Oh, huge. I mean, I had him, as you know, and I fairly well torpedoed my season. Yeah, I mean, I've got... You know, I don't think I'm a particularly good drafter. I think, you know, we talk about my skills in other areas, whether it's trading or picking up players off the waiver wire. I did have Bellinger. Yeah, it was a non-starter. When you spent that kind of money on a player who delivers, you know, you pay a top 10 price tag for somebody who delivers a sort of top 100, top 150 season, you ain't winning the league from that. So, yeah, disastrous.
Any other names, perhaps not so high profile, that spring to mind as zeros?
Yeah, I mean, not players I had, but I think Chris Bryant is really trading on sort of name value alone at the moment, desperately needs a change of scene. And, you know, clearly there's a lot of talent there, but it's just not happening at the moment. I think a lot of people bought into Pete Alonso. I think he had a superb last week of the season. Maybe if the season had been 6 months long, Alonso would have delivered a top 30 season, but people paid probably a top 20 price and sort of got a top 100 player. That wouldn't have helped. And then just something like Alex Bregman, just never really got it going, but it was only a sort of, you know, 7, 8, 9 week season. And then the obvious ones for me are the Yankees outfielders, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. People have paid big money for those, and yet again they were injured.
Yeah. Well, on a personal level, Stanton was one, as you know, that I picked up. It cost me $29. I mean, you only have to look at how many games he played, 23 out of a possible 60. I mean, you're stuffed, aren't you? Thankfully, I didn't spend monster money, but $29 was still a lot from a $300 budget. I think the biggest disappointment for me was a man that I have focused on as being someone that I definitively thought was going to have a top 20 season, and that was Ketel Marte from Arizona. Second base for me was a position that I wanted to really come in high, because I don't think there's a great deal of depth there, and you know, a man who hit 32 home runs in 2019. So if you divide that 60, so that's what, 6, 12, 18, so he should be about a third. You'd hope for at least 10, 11, 12 home runs, and he produced two.
I think last year was the year to have him, but equally I think he's a top 50 player. I just can't but assume he must have been carrying an injury for most of the season. I think very disappointing. I agree. I think a lot of people got burnt by Ketel Marte. But to be honest, that probably means that that's a buying opportunity for next year. So,
well, I was going to get onto that, because there were other players. I remember one of the discussions we had was the importance of focusing on a leadoff hitter, because that's runs and stolen bases and at-bats, and obviously a cleanup, because that tends to be a power hitter where you get your RBIs, you get your home runs. Try and find as many 1, 2, 3, 4 batters in your lineup. And that was a big reason why I went with Austin Meadows. So Tampa Bay was you know, down there to lead off, but he had also power potential. How big a disappointment was he?
Yeah, absolutely. But I would put him in the same bucket. Another real opportunity. He's another one who had COVID at the beginning of the season. I'm no doctor, but you know, presumably that sapped quite a lot of power. He's another one that has to be an opportunity for next year. I'm not saying I'd be paying a, you know, top 50 price for him, but I think he'll be available a lot below that. And he is somebody who has already delivered on talent as youth on his side.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to pitching. And this is on a personal level. Mike Clevinger, who, of course, as we know, ended up on the naughty boy step. That was my most expensive pitching pickup. What a flipping disaster. What an absolute flipping disaster. You know, I think he only played 8 games in the end, 4 games for Cleveland, 4 games for San Diego. That I don't even want to discuss it, because that was just $40 wasted on somebody who just basically wasn't professional. But then there were others. Matthew Boyd, how disappointing was he? I was focusing on the high strikeout rate, just didn't seem to be able to find the strike zone, you know, horrible ERA. And perhaps, yet another of those sort of, you know, you're looking to make a cheap pickup, ends up having a terrible impact on your ratios.
I think the lesson, though, Johnny, for all of us, you know, you spent the first, you know, hour and a half of this podcast, you know, doing your Oscar speech, because you won 2 leagues, and yet you're also saying you picked up, you know, the same league that you won, you picked up Austin, you drafted Austin Meadows, you drafted Ketel Marte, you spent fortunes on Mike Clevinger. So I think people need to not be too harsh on themselves. In most leagues, as long as you've got the ability to pick up new players, sometimes you just have to move on. Nobody can get it 100% right 100% of the time. You know, yep. You spent towards a third of your total auction budget on players who simply didn't pan out.
Yeah.
And you still won the league.
I think that's
the powerful thing. Do you want, I'm conscious of time, but let's waiver wire, I think, is quite interesting, because we spent quite a lot of time on that. And give me a waiver wire.
My
hero,
yeah. Yeah, right. Well, I think I did well across the board on the waiver wire, and I think that's a big reason why I ended up winning. And no question that my best pickup early doors, certainly for the first 6 weeks of the season, was Carl Lewis in Seattle, who was just hitting for fun, and everybody kept saying, well, it can't last, and it did, and it did, and it did. And actually, when he started to go off, I traded him, and I sold him high, which is another of those techniques you were very keen to teach me. I sold him at the top of the curve, and he did go off towards the end. And Devin Williams, the relief pitcher, who was just flipping phenomenal. You know, obviously not going to pick up monster holds, but his strikeout numbers were phenomenal, his ERA, his whip. So he's having a major impact on 3 areas. And literally cost me, I don't even have paid for him, maybe a dollar or something off the waiver wire. Those are the pickups, which I don't think I've ever appreciated as much as I have now, that you've taught me how important those sort of pickups are to turning a season from a competitive season to a winning one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's why we focus so much on, you know, kind of the suitcase as part of this. And it presumes, you know, most leagues are leagues where you can pick up players, whether it's once a week or once a day or whatever, or off the waiver wire. And I think it is a very underappreciated element of winning a league. I mean, you talk about maximizing your stats, maximizing your innings picks, maximizing your at bats in order to do that. And you know, in this season in particular, we focused so much on who was hot that week. And, you know, it was those kind of players who carried people to titles. So, yeah.
Question for you, just before we move on from this. You've already mentioned a couple of names. Any other names out there where you feel that their performance this season will mean they will be undervalued next season, and there's an opportunity there? I've got one obvious name. For me, pitching, it's got to be Walker Buehler. I just think that, you know, his season was, I mean, it was a number of reasons why it just never took off. We're beginning in the postseason to see how good he is, but I think there's an opportunity, because there's no way he's going for the money that he went for this season.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. If you want a completely random one on the same team, I think the Dodgers, David Price, we've forgotten because he opted out of the season, and he was traded from Boston to the Dodgers this time last year. And actually, I think that's a really interesting opportunity. I think people may have forgotten quite how good David Price actually was. In terms of other ones, I think Buehler's a really good shout. We've talked already about Meadows. I think anybody who's kind of carried an injury. The other guy I think I do really want to talk about, we'll talk about it in a second, is Yoan Moncada, who was a big tip of mine before the season. Again, he was affected by COVID. I still think he has all the talent in the world, a hit tool, a run tool, everything. I think Moncada I'll be big on again next year. So we'll talk about the preseason. There will be lots of opportunities.
Absolutely. Right, well, we're moving on to a part of the script that's entitled Hang the DJ, which I love. Basically, what you're saying is that you can listen to every podcast you're going, this one in particular, where we're trying to offer guidance, but at the end of the day, it's only as good as the person offering the guidance. So I have to put you to the test, Jimbo. You are the main man in the hot seat. My favourite part of the season, as you know, was the Fantasy Suitcase, where I asked you to select every week a player that was registered in under 20% of ESPN leagues. And the big question is, were you successful? I'm just going to mention the name Justin Smoke.
Yeah. I kind of, it's almost like I get the feeling you've kind of been through the list of everybody we've suggested picking out this year, and you've kind of rather randomly picked out three or four utter disastrous. I mean, I think this is the beauty of being a fantasy baseball analyst. You can always, you know, there is always somebody who's come off, but nobody can get it all right, and that's the beauty. You know, I've always said, I'm like fantasy baseball, it's an art, not a science. The key is to grab as many people as you realistically can, and you know, keep the ones who go off and dump the ones who don't. But yes, there've been a few that looking back, I don't know what I was thinking. Justin Smoke, you know, he left-handed bat in Miller Park. I thought it was a match made in heaven, but it clearly wasn't.
Yeah, but that just proves you're human, and I'm being really mean, because actually that's the only absolute disaster out there. The beginning of the season, I remember saying to you, choose me two hitters, two pitchers that you think are going to have big season. Now, if I remember rightly, Rafael Devers was one of the hitters, Yoan Moncada another, your pitchers, yeah. Zach Gallen and Julio Urias. So, in a sense, you sort of smashed it a couple of times, not so much the other.
I'd agree with that. I mean, hitters-wise, Devers, I still think, is a top 10 pick in the making. I think Boston had a spectacularly down year. His numbers were still good and solid, with a better cast around him and a bit more luck. I would still happily draft him in the top 25 next year, and I think he's got the capacity to, you know, to fully break out and be a top 10 hitter. Moncada, as I said, got COVID. I think he was severely affected by that, and he will again, you know, this early stage, be one of my top tips for next season. He is somebody who will probably be a top 75 pick, or even lower, maybe top 100, who I think easily has the capacity to be a top 40 bat or a top 40 player, full stop. So yeah. I'm still all on them. Urias, the worry for me is he's not pitching that long into games, so he seems to be fine for four or five innings, but not necessarily seven and eight innings full of Ks. Maybe that'll come as he's older, maybe it won't, but, you know, good team, he's okay. But Zach Gallen is probably one of the ones I'm most pleased with this season. I mean, he's somebody I said, you know, maybe can be next year Shane Bieber. I think already for me, Gallen is a top 10 pitcher in fantasy. I'm not saying he's going to be a top two or three pitcher, but definitely he's already a top 10. I'm not sure he's going to be valued as a top 10 pitcher. And I still think there's more value to be had off of Zach Gallen next year. So I will be all in on him again.
Now, obviously, the whole concept of the suitcase, and I will remind everybody, I asked you to find me hitters, pitchers that were actually only selected in 20% or less of a traditional ESPN fantasy league. So that put you under pressure right from the start. It, you know, I've taken the mick out of the Justin Smoke, which obviously was possibly your worst call. There were other interesting ones that sort of worked but didn't. Nate Pearson gets injured, but yet when he came back and was pitching out of relief, you could see his potential. Casey Mize, I think we have to accept, was a disappointment. Dylan Carlson, I hung on to him for ages, and he got hot right towards the end of the year. It's a tough ask. It's a tough ask, and particularly when they're rookies.
I think it's exactly it. I mean, I think, you know, you've got to try people out. But I think rookie nookie, as we've talked about it, we've been spoiled recently with the likes of Soto and Acuna just coming out, Chris Paddock last year, who maybe we could have mentioned him as one of the fantasy zeros of this year, you know, have come in and done brilliantly instantly. And this year it's been a lot more lucky, you know, a lot more luck involved. You know, if you'd asked me at the beginning of the season, would I rather have Ian Anderson or Spencer Howard, I'd have absolutely taken Spencer Howard. But look at their numbers at the end of the season, you go, oh, gosh, that was completely wrong. Yeah. You know, and actually, you know, 60 Sanchez has absolutely come in and done brilliantly for Miami. Would I have taken him or Casey Mize? If you'd offered me at the beginning of the season, probably Casey Mize. And these players all fluctuate over the next few years, but it's always difficult knowing which, you know, rookies are going to come up and really make an impact. And in this particularly, you know, confusing season, I think it was even harder with no minor leagues. So, but yeah, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Nate Pearson, I do think, has, you know, medium-term potential. Casey Mize, I don't know, you know, I'm a bit, you know, I don't think he's been amazing. And maybe sort of some sort of expectations are being reserved. You know, is he going to be more of a sort of a, you know, an SP3 rather than a true ace for Detroit? Maybe, who knows?
Well, if Justin Smoke was your absolute disaster selection, surely Teoscar Hernandez of Toronto, who I believe you focused on very early on. What a monster pickup that was.
Yes, I mean, this is the key. We talk about this, and this is less about me. I mean, I don't think I was far from the only fantasy pundit suggesting that Teoscar might have something. But yeah, we got in on him, suggested when he was only owned in about 20% of leagues 1 week into the season. There is value every year to be had. There will be a Teoscar next year and the year after that and the year after that. The key is to get onto them quickly, pick them up. I think Brandon Nimmo is available the same week. And Alex Lemon, we had quite a long conversation about Kevin Gausman, the San Francisco pitcher. I seem to remember you were guffawing merrily into your cornflakes or whatever you were up to at the time. And I don't think I ever saw him being quite as impressive as he has been. But, you know, Gausman is somebody who's lined himself up for a very interesting off-season and probably a quite considerable payday. So, yeah.
So, looking ahead, on the assumption next season is going to be a more traditional season, 162 regular games, what's the difference in terms of the time zones or in terms of finding value on the waiver wire? Are you still very much focusing on those early weeks or do you have a little bit more sort of breathing room?
I think you've got more. I mean, I'd still say that the key, most seasons you will have picked up the true difference makers who go from nowhere to being a top 50 player. Often would have gone in the first 2 weeks, almost certainly would have gone in the top first 4 weeks of the season, and definitely would have gone in the first 6 weeks of the season. There are other players who will get hot at different times. Somebody will come in at the second half of the season and be hot. But in the main, that's when you're going to get on them. Your first 4 weeks, possibly 6 weeks of the season is when you're really going to have to go, particularly for hitters. Pitchers can emerge after that, I would say. I think you're going to have more time next year because people have drafted their teams, they want to give their teams much more of a much longer leash before they start dropping people. So this year, you know, we were saying if they've had 2 weeks of a 9 week season and they're not performing, dump them. Next season, you don't really want to start dumping anybody until the calendar moves at least to May and probably, you know, in halfway through May, really. But they will be there. I promise you, when we're talking about this next year, there will be loads of pitchers that emerge. There always are. And there will be hitters that emerge, but typically they emerge earlier in the season.
Jimbo, before we move on, you know, I've enjoyed taking the mic and trying to point out on the occasion when you didn't get it right. No one could get it right, even you. You don't walk on water. But there were some extraordinary pickups that you suggested. Week three, Jesse Winker, who won an absolute tear for Cincinnati. Pedro Severino, who solved my catching issues early on in the season because I'd missed out on a decent catch. I'd gone with Sean Murphy, who took a long while to warm up, so I had to move him on. And then Will Smith, when Severino got injured, and Will Smith was phenomenal and still continuing to be so. Sixto Sanchez, you mentioned in week four. Corbin Burnes, can you believe? Rostered in less than 20% of leagues in week four. And you look at the end of the season, you said, just how? How? Why?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's when you look at that now and you're just going, the thought that halfway through this season, Corbin Burnes was rostered in less than 20% of leagues seems astonishing. But as I said, every year, a Corbin Burnes will emerge. It's just making sure that you are the first person onto him. And sometimes you just got to take that gamble, take the plunge, stick him on the bench if you need to for a couple of starts. Yeah.
And if there's one thing you've taught me this season, Jimbo, to be that person that spots that player so that he's still on the waiver wire for you to take advantage of, you have got to do your homework. Not just the general reading, but the Twitter accounts, the email accounts that you can access about the world. You know, all those experts out there, keep listening.
Or just listening to this podcast.
Or listen to that. Let you do all the work and just check in with us and you'll tell them. Absolutely. The problem is, though, the more success you have, you know, everybody's going to be listening and everybody's going to be going for the same player. But let's now turn up the heat. You know, the suitcase was tough enough. Players rostered in under 20%. But the Hail Mary, this was my personal favourite of the whole series. The Hail Mary, where you had to come up week on week with a player rostered in under 1% of the average ESPN Fantasy Roto League. The Hail Mary, well named. And by Jove, buddy, you nailed it on more than one occasion. Trevor Rosenthal in week one, who becomes the closer. What a shout.
Yeah, I think we might stick with that for the next 5 years. That might remain our best ever Hail Mary over 5 years. No, I mean, this has been great fun, actually, because it's quite interesting. I mean, I've got a list here The ones who didn't make it, you know, Bradley Zimmer, I was arguably higher on than Trevor Rosenthal. I really thought he was going to cement a place in the Indians outfield. He did for a couple of weeks, but then it didn't happen. Zach Godley, I think I mentioned 1 week, and then he got torched for sort of 8 runs, I think, in the next one, but in the Boston rotation. But I think there are, as you said, some really interesting ones. I think there's, if I was talking about learnings, you know, Trevor Rosenthal, there was quite a lot of chat about him, but that is somebody who has previous skills in the area, who's shown he's got a closer's mentality. But yeah, I mean, you know, to come in and do what he did at Kansas, then get traded to San Diego and do brilliantly there. And the other ones in the same bench, Jordan Romano, we talked about in week three, the Toronto closer. He got injured, but he became the Toronto closer. At the time, it was rostered in less than 1% of the leagues. Week four, we talked about Devin Williams, who you've talked about, and also Josh Stolman of Kansas, so I still think he's a good player and might well become the Kansas closer next year. So there's definitely, you know, there are opportunities to find closers in waiting owned practically in no league. So that, I think, is a really interesting place to mine. And hitting, I think, is harder. I'd say the one, you know, that I am proud of, more than just for a week when they at least were getting at bats, is Jose Marmolejos of Seattle, whose name we love, obviously, but more broadly than that, you know, I think he may well have a place in the Seattle lineup for the rest of the year.
And it is interesting what you say, that the majority of your successful Hail Marys were pitchers, i.e. players that became closers that nobody wanted when they were just in the sort of, you know, the middle relief. But suddenly when they take over as a closer, so they've got the holds and the saves to look forward to, it becomes a whole different ballgame. A lot harder with the hitters, you're absolutely right. And thank you for Devin Williams in week four, because that's exactly why I picked him up, was as a result of this fancy podcast and what a difference he made to mine. So some real success there, buddy. I do have to tip my hat. I'm not brutal. I'm not going to take the mick because you didn't get them all right, because that'd be an impossibility. But by Jove, you did make some fantastic.
I'm just grateful that you haven't listed quite so many of the other ones that didn't come off. But I mean, I think, you know, if we think strategically, I think that, you know, we talked about this, there is always pitching. And, you know, you could have literally gone to your draft, as you've done certainly in the past, and turned up on the wrong day, and actually drafted absolutely no starting pitching and no closers. You look to the waiver wire during the beginning of the season, you could have picked up Corbin Burns, Kevin Gausman, and probably 10 different closers. You know, we've talked about Sergio Romo, Trevor Rosenthal, Jordan Romano, Rafael Dolas of Toronto, Ty Buttrey, Montero, Texas, Devin Williams. They were all available on the waiver wire, and you could have potentially had the best pitching in your league entirely off the waiver wire.
See, that almost blows my mind, because that just blows the whole idea of going into an auction draft and spending vast sums of money on supposed great players. And it actually does prove the point that you made, which will be part of our pre-season fantasy guide that I'm very hopeful we're going to do for next season, that at the end of the day, there is always pitching to be had, whether it be starting pitching or relief pitching. There's always, no matter how big your league, even a 15-team league, there's always players to be had. Do not spend too much of your budget. And I think your attitude has always been like a 2/3, 1/3. So if you've got a $300 budget, $200 on hitting, $100 on pitching. Does that still hold true?
It does. I mean, I think you made the key point, which is about, you know, the most important fundamental which about how to win your league is understand your league size, your league parameters, and the amount of players rostered. That defines everything. So, yeah, in a 15-teamer, absolutely. I don't think you need, you know, a typical ace pitcher. I think you could have won with, you know, picking up, whether it's Giolito or Darvish at pick number 50, 60 or 70 this season. If you're in a 20-team leaguer, if you're an NL only with several bench spots, you are going to need some pitchers, and you're going to find that, you know, the likes of Devin Williams and possibly not Devin Williams, but certainly, you know, a lot of even middle relievers will be rostered early. But yeah, any league 15 teams and smaller, I don't feel the need to get, you know, one of the top two or three pitchers ever.
Jim, I've absolutely loved this. I've loved our opportunity to get together. I think it's been hugely helpful. I hope that that's been the perception of all those people listening who are into their fantasy baseball as we are. I'm very keen to do this next season. Is it something that you feel you can offer your time and focus on? I know it requires a lot of investment.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's been great fun. It's been nice to share. I think we've had things that have worked and things that haven't worked. And, Yeah, definitely. I think certainly for all people in the UK, I think what we found is there is actually quite a large, you know, whether you play fantasy sports or play fantasy baseball or whether you're just interested in it, I think judging by sort of, you know, feedback we've had and listener numbers, I think the market is much greater in the UK than maybe we'd realise. So I do think that if there's a genuine interest in us doing that, I think we're very happy to chat about it as long as people are very happy to listen in.
And obviously, we're still trying to fine-tune the ideas behind the program and the format. But I think in the off-season, we should perhaps do a monthly or once every 2 months. We should certainly do a catch-up. I would love it if you're up for it. Maybe we could do a sort of how to win your fantasy baseball league. I'm getting ahead of myself. As a sort of preemptor of next season, as we start talking about the prospects, pre-spring training, just about the different types of leagues, all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And there would have been trades, there would have been, you know, free agent pickups that have big implications. And love it. And, I just want to say thanks to you, JG, for your hosting and, being part of your Cinderella story and your run to the title this year. I mean, I'm not sure we can promise those kind of highs, but maybe we'll be a bit more professional next year and actually, less about Johnny and more about the fantasy baseball world itself. So, yeah.
Well, unless, of course, we can get off the ground the suggested fantasy league that we will have in unison with this podcast and get everybody to enter and everybody to take the two of us on. And, of course, if I end up winning that league, which you're in and all our listeners are in, well, then there'll just have to be no denying that I perhaps need to sit in your seat and you can come and present. We both know that's never going to happen.
He's lost it. He's
absolutely
lost it completely.
Well, you know, the worst thing for me is next season, you're going to be trying. And then once you do that, it's all just going to be all over before it's even started. I know you were like a cat playing with a mouse this season, you know, showing your love, not actually eating it, but, you know, playing with it. And it's only a matter of time before the claws come out. Anyway, it's been fantastic, Jimbo. I've absolutely loved it. And a thank you to you, mate, for all your input.
My pleasure. And particular thank you to everybody who's been listening as well. It's been a privilege having your company. If you're listening to the show, really appreciated you listening in to Johnny and I waffle on each week.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, and from me, thank you to all our listeners on the Fantasy Extra podcast. We will certainly keep you abreast via the social media platforms as to our plans for next season and the preseason. But meanwhile, stay well. I hope you enjoy the rest of the World Series. Go Dodgers, go Rays. Deliberately, they're not putting my flag on one or t'other. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for listening. We look forward to having your company very soon.